the Bangarahead. Then Canop Buddha the Batar. Artskan Swagani Big Rai. Ladies. Aho. Alas. Danyam. A miserable condition. Aho. Alas. Custom. Simply tribulation. Prakyai. Which after death are edible by dogs and jackals. Yan Vangrahai, perishable at any moment. That's better. Yet, because, na, not, upakriyat, would help. Aswa Aryahai, not meant for self-interest. The body, which is edible by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches, its relatives, must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. Please repeat. This body, which is edible by jackals and dogs after death for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. Purport. Similar advice is given in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.22.35. Evat janma pipayam dinam e dehisu parina artya divat vakya Sriya Archanam Sada. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. This is the mission of life. One's own body and the bodies of his friends and relatives, as well as one's own riches and everything else one has, should be engaged for the benefit of others. This is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 9.41, Bharata Bhumi Haya Manushya Janma Vara Janma Sayadikari Kara Parupakar. One who has taken birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. The word Parukyat means para upakar, helping others. Of course, in human society, there are many institutions to help others. But because philanthropists do not know how to help others, their propensity for philanthropy is ineffectual. They do not know the ultimate goal of life, Shreya Archanam, which is to please the Supreme Lord. If all philanthropic and humanitarian activities were directed towards achieving the ultimate goal of life, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would all be perfect. Humanitarian work without Krishna is nothing. Krishna must be brought to the center of all our activities, otherwise no activity will have value. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Staya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhyanastaya. So, I think every devotee understands this perfectly clear, that we are here in the service of the Supreme Lord. We're serving each other, and in effect we're serving the Lord. By serving one another, we in fact serve the spiritual master, we serve Krishna, we serve everything that has to be served in a proper function. And so in the material world, service is a whole different realm, that they don't serve. face on you. Hare Krishna. And so service and a proper attitude is something that every devotee understands, so not much to say about it, except that how you serve and the way you do serve is ultimately reflecting on your spiritual master or Srila Prabhupada and the whole movement at large. So whatever we do in the way of service to humanity is measured by what amount of how much it's satisfying the Supreme Lord and Srila Prabhupada. So that's a prime realm for understanding what service is all about. Now, in the case of Vitrasura, in this whole episode, The Adventures of Vitrasura, he was serving. His whole mood was to kill Indra, and so he did his very best. And Vitrasura ultimately was a devotee, and so it turned around. Indra got the bad end of the deal, and Vitrasura went back home, back to Vaikuntha, and served the Supreme Lord. So the whole turnabout is understandable, that if we do the best we can in whatever realm of service line we have, I think that's the terms of what perfection is all about, is to do something at the very best you can possibly do in the manner you do it, in the way you have facility to do any kind of service. So for me, it's serving in a way of doing sculpture, paintings, and architecture. But in across the line, that service line expands across the whole realm of all activity in Krishna consciousness. From the top to the bottom, everybody is serving. So in the material world, everybody's serving themselves. So service line for family, friends, nation, you know, the extension of the family is ultimately a bad deal, because you get no result. You only get the back end of it. And when you're in a war, as this whole thing is described later in the chapter, that Vitrasura was a very strong general, and he was commanding the forces against the Devas. And so it turned around. The Devas were successful, and they were routing the Asuras. And so they all ran. So all the Asuras are running, and the Devas are running behind him, killing from the back. Now, that's way against the code of military conduct. You have to face the front when you kill somebody. If you kill somebody in the back, like they killed John Lennon, they shot him in the back 3 times, not a good deal. So on a battlefield, if it's an auspicious battle, if Krishna dictates that this battle should be fought, like the Battle of Kukshetra, then ultimately the winner is, whether you die or whether you're victor, ultimately it's a benediction, because ultimately if you die in a battlefield, you go back home, back to Godhead. And so all those that died in Kukshetra reached a higher realm. And Vitrasura is an example of that also. And Indra, lamenting the fact that he killed a Brahmin, had to do penance for 1,000 years. He's in the stem of a lotus for 1,000 years, hiding in Manasarovara. And so, because the sinful reaction was chasing him, it's personified by a lady, unusually lady. She had tuberculosis and dripping with blood, you know, raggedy, just old, decrepit lady. And that's the personification of sinful reaction. That was chasing, you know, Indra, wherever he went. So finally he took this hiding place, and he's getting really hungry after 1,000 years. But he had to do penance in order to make up for the killing of that Brahmin. So he killed 2 Brahmins, and they're both brothers. When he killed his new guru, ultimately that was the beheading that was the impetus, that was like done not with great intent, or it was done just violent, it was just a reaction. And so, but Vitrasura, when he killed Vitrasura, it was a strong intent. And the method of killing this demon, or this devotee in demon garb, was interesting, that the Vitrasura had both his arms cut off, and Indra was throwing this mace weapon, and it bounced. He grabbed it by the one arm, and he threw it back, and he knocked Indra back, said like 12 yards. And so then this fight took place. And so in the end, Vitrasura had both his arms cut off. And so then he expands his body. like Agasura. And so he swallowed Indra and the elephant and swallowed him whole. And so by swallowing them, he thought his job was over. So he kept insisting, please, you know, kill me. I want to go back home, back to God. And this is the vehicle for doing that. If you kill me, ultimately, I know Vishnu is going to give me a benediction because it's already asserted that if he dies at the hands of Vitrasura, dies at the hands of Indra, that's his benediction. And so that was his long-standing desire. So he dies. Another, he gave up his body. After he swallowed Indra and the elephant, he says, my job is done. So he gave up his body and he left. So the same thing, Drona, when he was like told that his son had died, he just gave up his body. And he had his head cut off, and the same thing with Vitrasura. And so it took a year with that. I mean, Indra's now in the belly of Vitrasura, and he understands that there's no reaction, the body is lifeless. He cuts out through the belly, he comes out, and he cuts the head off, and so, of a dead body. And so he took 1 year for this weapon to go around his neck. His neck was very stiff. 1 year, 360 days to cut the head off. And so after hiding in 1,000 years, then he had the chance to come out, and he was forgiven. They did the Ashwamedha sacrifice, and he was reinstated in the heavenly planets. So in terms of death and dying, I had the fortune to witness Srila Prabhupada's departure in Vrindavan. And I'd like to tell that story. It's something that Prabhupada taught us from the beginning to the very end, the last moments, very instructive. Prabhupada's departure was definitely a learning experience. So the room was packed solid with devotees, and up until that time, anybody could go in the room. If you wanted to take darshan or Prabhupada, you could go in, no problem. And it was before that, nobody was allowed. The Prabhupada opened the doors and he wanted all his devotees to come, but unfortunately that word never got out. And so there were very few. I remember many days I was by myself in the room with Prabhupada. Many wonderful adventure stories, so I can't talk about it too much. It gets too personal. In any case, so Prabhupada is living an example of how he left. He said, of course, don't think it's not going to happen to you. It'll happen to everybody. We are going to leave our bodies very soon. And so right now, Karmarupa's getting to the end with cancer. Brahmananda left with a big smile on his face. And you'll see that devotees who leave their bodies generally leave with a wonderful attitude, very peaceful, very happy look, and ultimately back home, back to Godhead. And so we have that to look forward to. We're in the right place, doing the right thing, and it's the right moment for making spiritual advancement. There's no problem. And so all these devotees now are, Yasomatinanda is getting sick, Karmarupa in his position now, and Sarab Maharaj, before Maharaj, all these big devotees. Another devotee, Gauri, who left her body, I told a story before, this was years ago, but she was such a great saint. She was a big book distributor in Los Angeles, but she wanted to leave in the proper way, so she had herself put down on the floor like a yaz, like a sadhu. And she was asked if you have any more desires. And the doctor, Narottam, asked, you have 1 hour to live. Do you have any more desires? And so she smiled and said, no. And so 1 hour later, she's gone. But her departure was something unusual because as we took her to the Jamuna and burned a body, this big sandstorm blew up and it was like, you couldn't see even 1 foot in front of your face. Never before or after anything like that. And so her departure was unusual. But when Prabhupada left, the room, I could feel the energy. I mean, Prabhupada had many demigods come whenever we spoke. In Conway Hall, Narada Muni was sitting there in a British garb. He had his bowler hat and his umbrella, like the British do. And so Narada Muni was there. And so, but when Prabhupada left, you could understand that there's going to be some heavy, heavy, you know, vibrations coming from the spiritual world. And so I didn't see it, but I could feel it. The energy on top of our heads was like so thick and very tangible that there was a lot of heavy personalities of witnessing the event. And of course, the devotees having a wonderful kirtan. And Prabhupada was chanting, and he was told that he'll be leaving within an hour. And again, same thing, Prabhupada left. But that that moment, Prabhupada was conscious right to the very last. There's not a question of him ever falling into an unconscious state. He was in a meditative state. And so I remember many days being in a room with Prabhupada, just as it was the prelude to this, is that there was like so many devotees coming and going. But Prabhupada never diminished in his strength and energy. He was just a skeleton with skin covering it. And the tension and the pain in that kind of a body would kill anybody instantly. The doctors were just amazed by the fact that Prabhupada could still linger in a body that was so emaciated. For so long, he wasn't taking any food, hardly anything to drink. And so, of course, he said, I've given up family, there's no, sex life, no, I'm giving up eating and drinking, what to speak of mating, and ultimately, there's, making perfection that way, giving everything up. And so according to the sloka about the same deal, that we're in a position by which we can do that. We can give up everything. When I came here from Vrindavan, I was 37 years in Vrindavan and accumulated so much stuff. So it took me about 6 months to get rid of everything. And so I came here with a couple dhotis, and ultimately so refreshing to get rid of everything. I had a big studio, as big as a Krishna Balaram temple. I had artworks, I had sculpture, paintings, I had just a big collection of so many pieces of art. I just sold it all away. And so that's a secret, which is given here in the sloka, that if we're able to give away and to simplify and bring our needs down to nothing, where you just have what you basically need and nothing more, ultimately you can keep giving away, give it away. And the more you give away, of course, the greater benefit there is in terms of freeing the mind. And so you can actually understand that a free mind is a person who has no attachments, no ties whatsoever. And so that's possible. That's possible in this lifetime. And many devotees have aspired to that, especially towards the end when you're giving up the body. Then ultimately you got nothing left. There's nothing there that you can give up except this one lingering thing, this body. So, in terms of the death experience, Vitrasura was like, leading away and just kept insisting that, please, kill me. And Indra just didn't pick up on it. So finally, when he's speaking all this philosophy, Indra's looking at him and saying, what are you talking? I mean, all these words coming out of a demon's mouth, like Bali and like Prahlad, born in a demonic family. And so the same with Vitrasura. Unbelievable, the strength of his conviction to want to leave the body and leave it with his mind attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. And so ultimately, he was a great devotee, and unfortunately born as a demon. Now, Prabhupada did say, in our movement, there are also Brahman Rakshasas lingering and infiltrating in different ways. The CIA infiltrated, and it was obvious that it happened in Los Angeles when they infiltrated. There was a couple guys came in from the CIA and dressed as devotees, but they couldn't make it. One guy became a devotee, but ultimately they couldn't do the austerities, getting up. They just couldn't face the Mangalarti early in the morning and doing the chanting. It was obvious. And so Prabhupada made a joke about even the Indian Parliament was saying that our Indian government was questioning the fact where all that money came from, but ultimately it came from book distribution. I got a few more points I wanted to bring out. One thing is about the bones coming from the Dadichi, that he had so much power that he didn't have to give up his bones. He could have done whatever the bones were going to do. He could have done it himself. But ultimately it was the Lord's wish, and he didn't procrastinate in a certain way in the beginning, joking about the giving up the body. But can you imagine if all of a sudden the Lord comes here and says, okay, I want you all to give up your body right now. Anybody here would be able to do that? So it's like, it's something that was like told, and he had to do it. And we're in this situation as devotees who are being hospitalized. One of my personal experiences is that by being brainwashed, this movement is meant to wash our brains. Ultimately, we're criticized for that. But one time I'm this is in Fate Studios back in 75, and Prabhupada's having a Gurupuja going on, and I'm in the back, and suddenly the whole thing opens up. I'm struggling always to see Prabhupada, but I'm in the back. And so suddenly it opens up, and there's Prabhupada face to face. And so I got brainwashed within 3 seconds. I look in the eye, and Prabhupada just completely washed the brain. Completely fresh brain, and I had something I could look forward to. We got covered over again pretty quick. But in any case, Prabhupada could do that. He could clean your brain in a matter of seconds. So that's the process that we're going into. It's a hospital for cleaning the brain. Brainwashing is the ultimate end for the whole deal. This battle that took place with Vitrasura and Indra, it took 120 million years ago. And it was in Narmada River in the celestial planets. It wasn't here. And so it was between right after Satyayuga and the beginning of Tretayuga. And so this battle took place, and the demons were running after they were repelled by the demigods. And so, and then they were fighting and killing the demons from the back. And Vitrasura was, he says, "What are you doing? This is not the code of war." I says, "You have to fight face to face. Ultimately, if you do that, if you turn your back, that's a great disgrace and a cowardly action. Ultimately, you go to hell. You don't go to Swargaloka." So, now, one more point that I wanted to... when Indra's in the belly, and he's obviously he's understanding that maybe now's my chance to get out of here, and he uses his weapon to get to cut through the belly of Vitrasura, and ultimately he goes straight through, and he comes out, and he cuts off the head of the demon. But the same with Drona. I mean, he gave up his body just by sitting down on his chariot, just understanding that his son is dead, Ashwatthama is dead. Of course, it was a ploy by Krishna to get him to surrender and give up his body. Otherwise, these personalities don't die easily. Drona was like, you know, one of the first ones to, you know, understand that he can kill the whole army, you know, just by himself. And the same with Bhishma. And the same with Vitrasura. If he took his mind, he killed Indra, and ultimately when he swallowed him, so he understood that that's it. So now my job is done, I can leave, I'll go back to Godhead. So he left. And so our job, in terms of developing a proper mood of what we can do in this lifetime, is to excel ourselves in any way possible to do more. Keep increasing. And when you're asked a question, how can I improve my Krishna consciousness? Well, you read more, chant more, do more. Parasottam Matnai, you chant 64 rounds, you go to Ganga every day, you perform these rituals, and ultimately you increase your devotional service. And so chanting 64 rounds is not a hard deal. If it's, you get up a little earlier and you can chant, you know, 16, 32 before Mangal Arati even. And when you chant, I've learned something that helps me a lot, is that when chanting Hare Krishna, you look at Krishna. And when you go to Ram, 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 Hare Hare, you look at Radharani. And so you're looking back and forth, and so your mind can't flicker. As soon as it does, you come back to whatever picture you're looking at, Radha Shyamasundar, Radha Madhava. Just keep your eyes focused and your mind attended to the words, and you're chanting, you got to hear it. And so when you do that, ultimately it just flies. You just glide through your first 16 rounds. Then the second set, it comes a little bit smoother. By the time you're finished with 64, you're ready to do more. And so you can fix it so that you do your service and still do this. And then go to the Ganga and take bath, and ultimately, it's a wonderful cleansing process. How can you do even more than that? Last night I went to the Ganga, and they had a Ganga Puja going on. I never saw it before, but very interesting. And so that wonderful opportunity to serve the pure devotee, the Ganga. And so they did a wonderful artik and distributed prasadam. And it goes on every day. I didn't know about that. So here we are back in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, and I'm different. And I just want to speak about a little more about Prabhupada's departure. That what I saw, and this happened to me on a couple occasions, that it wasn't just Prabhupada sitting there. It was like the room was surcharged, and there was like a lot of energy coming in with Prabhupada. I mean, when one opportunity had happened in L.A. when we were dancing and chanting kirtan, the whole room exploded. And Prabhupada later described how these demigods came. Indra came. Narada Muni always shows up. Brahma, Shiva, and everybody's laughing. Everybody's laughing because the Malechas and Yavanas are dancing like this. And so we're under the scrutiny of the Supreme Lord. So whatever we do, however means we have to reach perfection in terms of perfecting our service line, that's looked at. And so nothing escapes because Krishna is in everything. In every atom, there's nothing Krishna is not. So we think about it, it may go through a routine of doing the same thing over and over every day. But ultimately, it should be a brand new experience every day. You renew yourself by renewing your vows of how you can increase. I can do something more to serve Krishna. And right now, we're doing a whole reset on the parampara figures for the altar in the new temple. And now we're doing also the standard figures for the around Lord Nrisimhadeva's temple. So there'll be all these demigods offering prayers and flowers. There'll be all these different pastimes of Lord Nrisimhadeva. It's interesting in Lord Nrisimhadeva's pastimes that, you know, when he's playing with the Hiranyakashipu, it's like a bird. It's like a, you know, a hawk. Anyway, animals do this. They play before they kill. And so this is interesting that he let him slide out of his hand. And the demigods are looking at this, and oh my God, here we go again. If he escapes and becomes, he doesn't die, then ultimately, because we're all watching this episode, they're going to come, he's going to come down heavy on us again. So Lord Nrisimhadeva is just playing around. So ultimately, he grabs him, and he grabs him, and then he comes up with his shield and sword and club, and so so many different weapons he couldn't touch. He was shooting air, and so the fight was, it was just bouncing all over the place. Hiranyakashipu would disappear because of the effulgence of Lord Nrisimhadeva. Lord Nrisimhadeva's effulgence is so bright, and anything else around it just instantly disappeared. And so, but Hiranyakashipu had that ability to appear and disappear. He's bouncing all over the place trying to find the right angle to get in to make his kill. But there was no hope. And so one devotee's making a film of this, and with that animated film, and I'm making the drawings for the storyboards for it. And so it shows, like, at one point when he gets him on a lap, he tears him apart, and you're looking, the camera's looking from the belly, looking out at Hiranyakashipu being torn apart, and Lord Nrisimhadeva is like pulling his intestines out, garland himself, in a pretty ghastly scene. The one painting Jadarani did many years ago, it was one of the most striking paintings. Everybody saw it and wondered, wow, what kind of god is this? You know, very half lion and half human, and wearing intestines, very bloody, gory scene. So it wasn't very appreciated by a lot of karmis that just see it for the first time. So, but there's Prahlad with no fear. And everybody is so happy now that my father is dead. And so you have no more problem about, and that Lord Shiva is there witnessing this whole thing. Understanding, of course, this is not the end of the devastation, because he's involved in that. So when Lord makes up his mind to devastate, it comes in a different fashion. It wasn't time. But this is a prelude to it. When he was screaming and yelling, it broke through, and Lord Brahma was shocked that the planets are going to be destroyed. And so he comes back, he comes in to watch, and he's also there offering prayers. And so they all came. I mean, every demigod, and we're doing that now, we're making big figures of these demigods, which will go up to 10 feet high. Shiva, Indra, Brahma, and the Vishnu Dudas, a couple of those were there, and Lakshmi. And so they're all offering prayers, and the Rakshashas, and Parvati and Kupa, and so and her two sons, and it's right, it's like a, you know, the whole it's a completely full of demigods offering their prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva. And so such a big moment, to get rid of Jai, from Jai and Vijay. Jai is the one that was in his body. So it was a chance for him to end up and go back, or take the next birth. And so the depiction of all this, to show Lord Nrsingadeva an explosive nature, like coming out of the pillar, you know, exploding, that pillar just shattered, and all of a sudden there's this amazing configuration. And when Hiranyakashipu saw it, he couldn't believe what he was looking at. What is this? You're not man, you're not animal. And of course, Lord Brahma's the benedictions he gave, he covered so many different areas we know about. But after the end of it, and after he killed all, Lord Nrsingadeva kills all the thousands of these warriors that came charging at him, and he just ripped them all apart by his nails. He had all these weapons. He had one painting, there's eight arms. Each one's got a weapon. And so, but he just used his nails, and he ripped everybody to pieces, the whole, how thousands of soldiers that came after him. So finally it's over. And so Lord Brahma's offering prayers, and then Lord Nrsingadeva says, listen, he says, you made me big trouble, so don't offer these demons any more benedictions. And so from that point on, they never got any more, so it said. But the whole episode of Lord Nrsingadeva taking this Hiranyakashipu apart, there's such an exemplary thing for what we see and experience within our own devotional life. A couple of episodes that took place. Jayananda in San Francisco is walking down the street, and one of these big, gigantic guys, you know, 7 foot tall, big muscular, you know, big ape, stop this, whatever you're doing. And went right up to Jayananda's face, nose to nose, and stop it immediately. And Jayananda just looked at him. And he was staring at him and just chanting more and more chanting. And Lord Nrsingadeva prayers start coming out. And this guy just turned around, backed off like a little puppy. Another episode, another devotee. It was Jayananda again. And so it was some demon came up to him and started chanting nonsense talk and started trying to criticize and making trouble for the Sankirtan party. And he just warned him. I said, listen, you got to be careful. You do this, your life is dangerous. In danger. And so he kept on doing it, you know, chastising, vulgar, shouting vulgar words at the devotees. So they're ready to cross the street. And this guy is walking with his back to the street and looking at devotees as they come walking across the street. So he stepped off the curb and got hit by a bus. Dead, flashed on the spot, just knocked him right out. So Hirani, then there's another one, Hridayananda Maharaj, had another experience like that, that he's leading a chanting party somewhere in California. And so all of a sudden, he told the guys, I'm warning you, don't do this. Don't interrupt and don't make so much trouble for the devotees, otherwise you get a reaction. And so as soon as he said it, the guy had a heart attack and dropped dead on the spot. So we're not playing around. Ultimately, we're protected as Prahlad is protected. We all come from demoniac families to some degree. At least I can speak for myself. And so, the whole idea of this protection that's given is a shelter. The umbrellas we use every day now, but the umbrella, the real shelter, is the holy name. And so by chanting more rounds, and I'm experienced, I haven't done 64 rounds in years, and just to do it is like, it's so nice to be able to clean, I mean, again, the brainwashing effect. So that we keep getting our brains clean, whatever we want it or not. So the process is there, and it's very strong if we do it. So the idea of the sloka is to give up everything for the benefit of the Supreme Lord. And so if we can just keep an understanding, when you have a household, it keeps growing. It just automatically, it just keeps increasing, you know, as a household expands itself, we expand. And ultimately, to give it all up, it has to be singled out one by one. And so once you do detach from the whole deal, ultimately there's a liberation that you feel, and you don't understand until you do it. And so once you give up the things that you want the most, it's hardest to give up those things. Your family, friends, and you know. Ultimately, I go back to my hometown in America, and I just can't see it anymore. I can't watch. They're all eating meat, intoxicated, and just going straight to hell. and they won't listen. No matter how much preaching you try to do, they just don't change, my own family. And so they just go on, this is the way we've been trained, we've been brought up this way. Our mothers taught us to eat like this. You get this food shoved down your mouth when you're a baby. I remember it when I was about 3 or 4. Gerber's baby food, you get shimmed in your mouth, you know, you can't spit it out fast enough. And so, I mean, unfortunately, those in the earlier days were, we had to go through all that. And so devotees born in a movement are so special. And as each generation increases, there's going to be greater amounts of service line available, and there'll be so much going on. Once this big temple is built, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people are going to come here, and the preaching will be unlimited. What we're doing now is making preaching like Prabhupada wanted on the walls. He wanted the walls to preach. So the sculpture, the paintings, the lila will be seen in vivid, very vivid way. And we're getting a new kind of a system, hopefully today, by which we can take a sculpture done in clay, make a plaster mold, and take out the clay and spray metal into the mold. And you instantly have this beautiful metal, a permanent sculpture that will last hundreds of thousands of years. And so the temple is meant to do like that, to be a permanent structure, marble, granite, permanent stone, and this GRC, which is now a very permanent thing, glass reinforced concrete is another element. So, and then bronze. And so all these different elements we're using, we did it in Vrindavan. I've been involved in a different ways of both these samadhis. And in Vrindavan, it was done to make it look like it's made out of sugar candy. So all that marble is sweetly carved and just beautifully designed, and floating staircases. And there we did some bronze panels of Prabhupada walking, some big panels. And right now, the most photographed thing in Vrindavan are those panels. But everybody's standing in front of Prabhupada, and there's one Prabhupada walking. And so on that panel, I put the foot right smack in front of everybody's face. And so already it's going down about an eighth of an inch. People kissing it, touching it, crying on Prabhupada's foot. And so it's already shrinking, highly polished. So that's the thing about bronze. It's going to be polished by people touching and crying and kissing. And there's a foot of St. Peter's in the Vatican. And over hundreds of years, that foot just disappeared. It's half the foot now. So we have to replace these after a period of 100 years or so, new feet for Prabhupada. So in terms of devotional service, the line is unlimited. As we roll along with this, with the sculpture and the painting and the work that has to go into this building, it's going to take years and years of dedicated service with a lot of artists. And if you are an artist, you know, please be in touch with us about this. If you have art talent or you're interested to be a part of this thing. And so ultimately it's a lifetime obligation to all of us to keep doing more that we can do to increase and to develop and to glorify Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go Brahmanandi. Any questions? And there's a, got a microphone somewhere?
Thank you for the class. I was just thinking about Ritasura's situation, that he was fixed in his goal of going back to Godhead. And he had a very, as you said, a service. He had a very challenging service that he has to fight against the demigods and also go up against Indra and be killed by Indra. And I was thinking, what can we learn from this? How do we become as fixed as Ritasura, despite the odds being against us?
That's a question or a statement. I don't know. Say it, make it as a question, make it a little more simple. I can't understand that.
How can we be as fixed as Ritasura, despite having the odds against us?
Well, Ritasura, I mean, it's a special case. Not like every demon has got the qualities of a saint, but he certainly had, because he's the brother. Indra killed two. He killed his guru first. You know, he made a mistake, you know, Brihaspati, and just that started the whole affair. Then he kills the second guru, cuts his head off, you know, impetuously, and he did that. So two Brahmins are killed. And so Vritrasura, born out of the yajna, so that he's the brother of the one that was got cut off, you know. And so he's born with this kind of understanding that he's been told by the Vishnu that he has to do this and he's going to be ultimately liberated. So he's a devotee. And so ultimately Vritrasura is a special case for being a demon, born in a demonic family, like Bali and like Prahlad. You know, both those two also born in demoniac families, but very highly elevated, very sincere, pure devotees. Is that answered? I mean, I don't know. Did I get the thing right?
Not quite. Maybe it's because this is a specific scenario of Vritrasura being...
Speak more into that a little.
Sorry.
More.
So, is this better? Yes. So, maybe because Vritrasura is a specific scenario where he has this particular service that he has to be killed by Indra. But I'm just trying to figure out, what about us though? What can we take from this so that we remain enthusiastic, that when things are going wrong, when things are difficult, that we don't give up? You know, like Vritrasura's hands were chopped off, still he continued fighting.
Yeah, that's a good point. That actually Vritrasura was very instrumental in keeping this fight going on. He didn't want to give it up. Don't give up. That's a key lesson here in this whole episode, is that whatever we do, there's no failure. There's no way you can stop working or stop serving. Don't give up when you got a project going and it's too difficult. You think, well, I can never do it. But Prabhupada changed all that. He ascribed, assigned different things to devotees. Just before the whole book distribution started, Ramachar gave a class about this in LA recently. He said that ultimately, before the press, before we even had a press, before ISKCON Press was even started, Prabhupada was delegating devotees to go out, learn book printing, learn how to do book binding, learn how to do correlation on them. And he was having a training up devotees to do the work. And so even before they were so disturbed because they couldn't do it. We started a magazine, and the only thing the devotee knew about magazine was how to read it. And so they don't give up. So Prabhupada gave the energy, and I would think, and certainly Vritrasura had the energy to go on and do that. And he was calling all the demons just rascals, cowards. You're just like nothing but stool coming out of, you know, your mother's womb, your urine coming out, like, you know, for you're born that way from the same. In any case, they were just like, Prabhupada would empower us. I got this. I felt that really increasingly, you know, when we were working, doing different aspects for Prabhupada. And even after Prabhupada's, even now, as whatever goes on, it just seems like the empowerment keeps increasing. The more you're able to do, the more empowerment comes. And as you understand that you never give up, this is something that's just unheard of. You don't give up, no matter what. Even the difficulties increase, like the Marines say, when the tough gets going, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. The same thing for a devotee in devotional life. That ultimately, if we're having difficulties, these are stepping stones, not material blocks. Ultimately, we're here just to take these steps and just bounce off and just keep increasing our devotee devotional line to the point where we're actually becoming pure devotees. It's possible. It's available for everybody. That's the process, to become so pure that ultimately we leave this body in a pure body, not as a conditioned soul. And so if we do it, actually we don't give up. We keep aspiring, we keep chanting, increasing. Ultimately, we get that will come. And ultimately, we've had experiences with devotees that come very close, if not all the way. So it's available. And the process is perfect, and we're here to do that. Does that answer it? Okay. Anybody else? Good. You have a questionable look on your face again. Nothing? Anybody else? How about you? Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go up, Brahmandi.